For many business leaders, conflict feels like a topic best left to human resources. Yet unresolved conflict has real bottom-line impact. Loss in revenue, legal costs, drop in productivity, decreased motivation, and turnover. That's why we've created the Beauty of Conflict Journey, an online interactive learning experience to help you, your team, and your entire organization learn to embrace conflict in new and healthy ways. Find out more at www.thriving.com/BOC-journey. And we'll put that link in the show notes. Hi, I'm Chris Marie Campbell.
And I'm Susan Clark.
And today we have a guest with us, Dr. Lloyd Kilmer, who has over 4 decades of experience in K-12 and higher education in 4 states. He holds degrees from the University of Nebraska-Lincoln and University of Kansas. He served as a teacher, high school administrator, professor of educational administration, and academic department chairperson and assistant dean of college. In his encore career, he and his partner, George Koenig, created a company that serves the needs of struggling students academically and socially. In addition, the firm provides organizational and school improvement training and coaching. So welcome.
Yes.
Good morning.
Yeah. Lloyd, what I'm interested in, you also are involved in restorative justice. How, I'm sure that came through your negotiating different school and administration things. Can you share a little bit about that?
Sure. I've always been involved at the school district level, no matter where I was, whether it was at the university or here in the community, with contacts at church and networking and that sort of thing. You get to know where maybe your skills will match up. And we will break this down into pre-pandemic and post-pandemic. Pre-pandemic, here in the Quad Cities, and we have 4 communities on either side of the Mississippi River in Illinois and Iowa. Each one is different than the other. Illinois is different than Iowa, all those sorts of things. And so there's never kind of one-stop shop sort of thing for anybody who's looking for improvement techniques and that sort of thing. But the largest school district of the 4 cities is Davenport Community Schools. Very diverse, very urban. All the challenges that would come with an urban school district, whether it's in Iowa or California, wherever it might be. And working with a group of community members, there's always been a struggle in schools to provide opportunities for kids and families to improve without going through what we call the school criminal justice system, or in the community, the justice system as it is. As we were working with schools to better connect with their communities, we ran into this concept of restorative justice, which comes from indigenous communities and goes back thousands of years. You think, who would run the police force on the Lakota Nation? Who would run the justice system with the Cheyenne? They ran it on their own. And they ran it on their own by using their community to provide opportunities for mentoring and sometimes consequences for people that didn't follow the traditions and the rules of their community. But it's very different than a Western approach. Western approaches are crime and punishment. You do something wrong, there's a whole set of statutes that say if you did this, you're going to get this kind of consequence, whether it be monetary or loss of freedom, whatever it might be. And as we can see in the United States, we have more people incarcerated than any place in the world. In contrast, in Europe, in the Scandinavian countries, they can hardly keep their prisons open because they use restorative practices in the schools, in the communities, and the criminal justice system. And so these things get resolved without having to put people into incarceration. And then the post-incarceration with probation and all that sort of thing, which creates all sorts of demands on communities, not only financially, but emotionally and economically. So
I love knowing that it's like such an old tradition and has been used successfully in modern day in other places, as well as coming from the indigenous peoples.
Now, I'm not sure. I got introduced to a little bit of this when I was working up north in Canada with indigenous communities that you said. Mm-hmm. Now that, and I don't know if it's the same here. What I been a part of and seen was where they would bring, something had happened, an event had occurred, and they would bring members of the community together, a diverse group of community members as well as community leaders. And both the person who was being accused and the accuser would be there. They'd have they'd share what had happened, and they would discuss through dialogue and conversation what, if there were going to be consequences, what was needed, what was happening. So it wasn't like a right, wrong thing. It was much more of a, let's talk about the consequences of this, what happened, the impact, and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And a decision was made collaboratively to what would be the best results. Is that the same kind of process?
The basic drill. The four parts of the restorative process are, first of all, an encounter, where you have an opportunity to discuss what's happened and the harm that was created. And then amends, the expectations that something will have to change. The reintegration, that is, how do I get back into my community and start making better decisions? And then inclusion, providing all a way to collaborate if there's a relapse, and many times there are. Who will be the backup? Will it be the ante? Will it be somebody in the leadership structure? That sort of thing.
So encounter, amends, reintegration, and the last, I think those are right.
Inclusion. In terms of what could happen next.
Yeah. If there is a misstep, what are they going to be the next?
Creating all those, the resolution, whatever it might be.
Mm-hmm. And so you use this in the educational system in the four cities. Is that true? Or in one of those?
In a kind of spotted way. Our local juvenile detention center uses this a great deal. And they're probably the strongest. Doing this in schools is really a culture shift. You really have to have a lot of buy-in from your school board down to building administration, and also the teachers have to say they can't, if there's a disruption in the classroom, you can't just set them out to get fixed and then come back with a different product, because that's what they must expect. If you don't fix them, then you're not doing your job.
Yeah. Right. And how are you going to fix them in a moment? And there's also this blame, right, wrong, binary thinking versus a dialogue. There might be more of a dynamic that's even going on that could be unraveled.
If we talk about post-pandemic behaviors, we have all sorts of additional disruptions in schools with kids and families making different decisions. Yeah. So post-pandemic, a good friend of mine whose daughter is a senior this year at the largest school in the Davenport schools, she was doing at-home instruction all the way through the pandemic. And then when she was forced to go back to school, she said, I'm not going back. And mom says, what do you mean you're not going back? She said, I don't know that I can handle this.
Wow.
And she's an aspiring softball player, very good. And how do we work out that participation with the rules of participation in the state of Iowa? You've got to be in school, that sort of thing. And how do you work it out at the school site? So as she was learning online, she's getting good grades and that sort of thing. But you have to be in school and participating to be eligible for interscholastic athletics. You can do club sports all that you want. So she ended up going, because she couldn't get a PE credits online yet to actually be there. So she went to PE and to an advanced placement course for two periods a day. So she goes two periods, and the rest of the time, she's doing her classwork at home and that sort of thing. And so that compromise was worked out between the coach, her teachers, and then actually the state association had to get in gear to say, how are we going to measure, first of all, participation of students so they're eligible to participate in athletics? And then how do we monitor it? Because you have to maintain a 2.0 grade point average is the standard through most districts to be eligible to participate. Who's going to keep track and all those sorts of things? That was worked out. It isn't technically restorative justice, but it's what we call restorative practice. So we go from just the kind of the traditional encounter sort of thing to a set of, not rules and regulations, but practices and norms, which are more restorative rather than punitive.
I love that we're talking about education, but I also, when we first came on, you said, do you want me to go the education route or the business route? I actually think restorative justice would be a great idea in businesses. And I'm curious what you've found and how you're doing that, because it sounds like you are, if that's the case. Yeah.
Yes, it's the case. And so in all my various roles, there are two things that really are challenges, finance and then personnel. And that's just the way it goes. And sure, Chris Marie, you can applaud that, in that you've done lots of management and structuring in the corporate settings that you're in. But again, if you think back to it, there's a whole handbook for everybody to follow with rules, regulations, and that sort of thing.
Right.
I mean, does it always fit a lot of interpersonal issues?
No, it doesn't. That's how come we work so much in the
classroom. So let's take the most common, sexual harassment, or just harassment. Let's not even call it sexual. We'll call it just harassment, where you have one employee or group of employees that treat somebody else without respect, without responsibility, that sort of thing. They just do it for sport or whatever reasons that the bullies or people like that want to do that. But it interferes with the functioning of the company. You've got disgruntled employees. That employee who's been aggrieved is going to come to HR and say, what are you going to do about this? I don't feel comfortable to be around this group, so on and so forth. And the traditional is the management would call the person in, the individual creating the situation, and write them up or do some kind of punitive activity to get him or her to quit behaving the way they are. And lots of sticks, not very many carrots, and certainly not anything in between. Instead, using a restorative practice, you would get together the perpetrator and the victim into a group of their peers who have been trained in the practices. You just don't put somebody into a group of individuals. So you may have somebody from the secretarial corps. You may have somebody from middle management. You may even have somebody from the C-suite that help with these encounters to work out a solution. The typical practices, you sit in a circle. You have what's called a talking stick. Nobody's allowed to interrupt. Everyone gets an opportunity to share his or her thoughts. And the process, you go around the circle many times to bring up, okay, how you felt when you feel this, well, I feel physically ill. I don't want to come to work. Or I start to avoid some of my responsibilities. That's not good. Middle management says, we pay you to be here, but at the same time, it's our obligation to have a supportive environment. And then you turn to the perpetrator. What exactly is that you think this person is talking about? And they may say, I don't know what it is at all. And you go to the victim, so she makes fun of me. She makes comments about my hair. She's always interrupting me. She never asks anything about my personal life. It's all personal or it's all professional sort of stuff. And then you turn to the individual perpetrating, explain yourself in front of your peers.
I love that. Lloyd, do you have a time? Because in business, it's we got to get things done. We can't take all this time, all these people. We dedicate an hour to this? And if we haven't gone all the way around or somebody's, what is it, grandstanding, they're talking on and on. Like, how do you deal with things like that?
You've got a leader who is trained in managing the conversation.
But
you can't say, we're going to get this done in an hour. Not in an hour, but you may have to come back for another hour.
So you would just time box it and come back again because it's not
applicable. Come back again. And maybe even that hour might start changing behaviors. You do a check-in. Yeah, I think we're good. That's good. But we have to have a plan that reinforces this ongoing.
Now, I love this. I think it's great. It does sound like not restorative justice, but another restorative practice idea. And I think that could actually be something. I love the idea of the team. It sounds like almost a restorative practice team that is made up of people who've been trained at different levels in the organization that can come in and support a process like this.
Right.
But
you have buy-in from top management that says, this is going to be a little inefficient at times. And there may be times where people fall off the wagon and have to be brought in again. But our job is to support people so they can be as productive as they can for our company so we can meet our outcomes. When they can't, then you have to make other decisions. For instance, in schools, when you have sexual harassment and it is the accused comes in, then Title IX kicks in and you have a whole set of procedures that have to be followed, records that have to be kept, and that kind of extends. It's sometimes hard to do when it reaches that level to do a restorative process, but you do the crime and punishment side, and then you come back and redo it with a restorative approach.
And now in business, so I imagine this is what you and your partner do, is you train people in the restorative justice process in the organization. Is that true?
And each one has to create their own. So it's that traditional business development sort of thing. Mm-hmm. It isn't that you just go in and you put a fix on it. This development has to do with not only HR, but your how you pay people, how people are accountable for their decisions. This whole thing of returning to the office is just, I don't know if you've had this in your practice, but it's just blown up everywhere where you've got certain managers who are bound and determined to return to the 40 hours a week, change your desk, and supposedly this is going to make the company better until you say, show me the proof. And then they're a little short on the proof side.
Yeah.
And then the extreme, the others where individuals say, I don't want to go in at all. I don't want to be part of the team in that fashion. And in between, there is something that's going to have to be worked out across companies and organizations and governmental entities so that we honor the fact that some people can be very productive at home. And at the same time, say it is important for you to be around physically your coworkers at times to be part of the team.
We have seen that, how do we integrate this? And how do you, in the business world, how do you, because so often it's, I'm just going to make the decision. That's what happens in business, the highest person in the room. One, I guess, I imagine you'd have to have, and I know you said somebody from the C-suite, you'd have to have buy-in that from the executive team that this is how we're going to do it. But how do you stop those managers that just, I just can't stand it. We're going to make a call and you're wrong and you're right and blah, 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 blah.
Sometimes you have to go have an encounter. And sometimes it's important to write it down. This is what we believe. And this is what we believe as a company. This is what we believe as a group or a division. This is what I believe myself. Have them write it down, read it back to them, say, what part of this can you not live with? And what are you willing to do if you do revert back to old practices or old behaviors?
Do you have any stories about like how you've seen this be successful in the workplace, specifically as post-COVID?
Yeah, let's see.
I put you on the spot there. I didn't mean to do that.
Well, that's okay. Yeah, I'll just take the workplace, the school world, which I'm most familiar with here post-pandemic. If you haven't noticed, we have a huge crisis with personnel and education. There aren't enough teachers. Nobody's going into teacher training. Who knows who's going to be there when your grandchild hits second grade, if there will be anybody there to teach him. Right now, if they want to take science or math, they're probably going to be out of luck because they don't exist anymore. They were hard to find in the first place. So they're leaving for workplaces that don't have as much stress and contention and really just bad behavior. So right now, education's on the whipping boy side of cultural changes that are happening in our country. So when you have a group of individuals who decide they're going to take charge of the school library instead of the librarian and decide who's going to read what, under what conditions, that sort of thing, and short circuit that, the library is not going to take it for that long. When you load up a junior American Lit class with 35 or 40 students with all sorts of different types of needs and say, handled on your own, you're not going to stay there that long.
Because my niece is doing that teacher.
Yeah. We have all sorts of brands of trauma that are in place now that will not go away on the part of the kids and on the part of the teachers. So sometimes the teachers don't understand children's behaviors coming from this childhood trauma that they're not able to regulate and follow directions. And it's not because they don't want to, it's because they can't because of the traumas that they've experienced. Same true of teachers who have tried and tried to meet the needs of the kids and just can't do it because our systems were not set up to teach in the pandemic as we've done for millennia before that. And the supports were lacking. And so they just bail instead of trying to come to grips with it and work with administrators and school boards to say, how can we do this differently?
And so you have seen some situations where I love the example of the librarian who's been asked to, I'm assuming, ban books or do something because of parents who are upset, this cannot be read. And then you got other parents who are like, this is actually important to read.
Yeah.
And
why are you taking away that from my show?
Yeah. And then how to actually bring the right people together to have a conversation about what are our systems, because that also brings it into what is our polarized conditions, even politically, which
show up at the school.
Show up at the school. And have you found that can be something that you could come up with a restorative practice to keep it from just becoming, okay, you can't stop someone from quitting, but at least maybe you can make it better for whoever might come in.
I think making sure that all the voices are heard, and kids' voices don't get heard very often. Now, I did hear a news piece last week in Newark, New Jersey. The school board has decided to allow high school students under the age of 18 to vote in school board elections.
Wow.
Well, juniors and seniors now are eligible to vote just like anybody else in the community. They said they are the primary customers.
Right.
They're the ones that need to make the call and provide the input. You better let them vote as well. I thought it was brilliant.
Yeah. Wow. Oh, I love that. That's great. Okay.
How would people like this restorative justice? We started hearing about it a while years ago, but many people haven't. How do you even help people start to get their mind wrapped around this and even consider it in schools, consider it in business?
I think they have to go see it and experience it a little bit before you get it. One of the things we did pre-pandemic, this group of activists and I, we went to Chicagoland where they have places that are called restorative hubs. And these restorative hubs are dealing with all sorts of trauma in neighborhoods. There were two in particular that we visited, but one, it was run by a priest, and it was the restorative practices were to deal with the victims and the perpetrators of gun violence in their neighborhood.
I've seen a podcast on it. This is a great setup. Yes, keep going.
So they were dealing with the moms whose children were gun violence perpetrators. They were dealing with the moms who were gun violence victims and trying to bring them together. And on top of that, they layered on kind of a vocational look program to get kids back to doing things rather than gangbanging, to learn some skills in a very supportive environment and do the two for one. So in the hubs, you have the restorative practice, but you already also have some kind of programming to change behaviors and change circumstances.
And so you went there to get some learning and how this is a way to get introduced to it.
Right.
And I know that does still exist because I have seen a couple either podcasts or shows. There's a way for people to learn more about it.
And I would imagine this is nationwide, but there's places where it's more integrated than, I don't know, if Seattle or other locations.
Yeah, I would suspect it's probably more urban. But again, the fact that we have these indigenous communities that live in primarily rural areas, you would have it there too.
We have it here in Montana.
We have it for youth, for a restorative justice system for youth and families. So I know it does exist, even in our neck of the woods.
And it is our view of the world as far as even we deal with conflict is you need to have a dialogue. It's not right and wrong. Actually slowing down, having the conversation, be curious about the impact of what my behavior was on you, like for smaller incidences, but on teams, on business teams, being willing to take time to digest those in a container, not just one-on-one. Because that's another thing people do in business is we just have these, I'll go talk to HR and then HR will go talk to the perpetrator and it's, or the boss will. And it's all these one-on-ones and that does nothing to really seam the relationship or help the other person really feel the empathy of my behavior on you.
Oh, and
Because
sometimes that's the piece that's missing between these people dealing with each other too. It's this has an impact on our whole organization.
We're all dealing with watching two have this thing go on.
Law enforcement, the beat cop, knows about restorative practices, as well as the county attorney, as well as the judges. Then you've got a seamless team and handoffs that isn't just the one-on-ones. It's part of a better system. And I suspect those places that have it as part of their practices in law enforcement and the criminal justice system probably are more advanced than those that don't.
I believe it. Is there a way for business leaders to learn more about it, other businesses that are using it or any sort of...
What you're doing.
Yeah.
Right now, since I'm semi-retired and post-pandemic, don't network quite as much. I couldn't give you a place to say, okay, go here. Go to John Deere and see this.
Okay.
Though I would point you at John Deere. They do have some excellent practices. You're probably going to find it with some nonprofits as well. So one of the things that I'm involved with is on the board of a group called Humility Homes and Services, which provides shelters, low-income housing, and housing for those that are challenged in the Quad Cities. And really, their whole process is restorative as well. They do housing first. We'll get a roof over your head first, then we'll deal with the addiction, and we'll deal with the mental health issues and that sort of thing. But none of that's going to happen if you don't have a roof over your head.
I think it's a very powerful practice. And I love that you're willing to share it with us, even though you're semi-retired. And that you've actually seen, I love just even knowing that some company like John Deere, like a big name, is using this, adds credibility to other organizations checking this out. So listeners, I would encourage you to start talking about this, see if you can see it in action and talk to your leaders about the possibility of this even being a process, because there's lots you can do to bring it into your organization. So how can people, if you want people to connect to you, Lloyd, how can people do that? Or just if, even if they wanted to like, hey, Lloyd, how can I do this? How can they find you?
Sure. They can find me on LinkedIn, where we all find everybody. And I assume you guys found me. So LinkedIn website, it's you can check out, it's performancelearning.com. And so we have all the stuff on our organizational development, also our tutoring practice and that sort of thing. So you can get a little sense of kind of work that we do. They're interested in what happens at John Deere. There are some individuals who are probably key to what they're doing. Because again, they're having trouble finding quality employees. And with the diversity that we have in the Quad Cities and the fact that if we don't hire these individuals who come through immigration, there's not going to be anybody to do our work. They're really reaching out to try to create these systems so that every nationality or religious group or whatever that's working for the company feels like they're part and that they fit rather than being just an add-on.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love that. And it's a real business problem that has a humanitarian answer. That's what you're starting. Yeah. That's really great.
It helps the bottom line. And that's that and it for just fun. So
I know. That's what makes people in business stand up and listen. It'll help me with my bottom line. Okay, maybe I'll check it out. Most often. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Lloyd, for being on the show and introducing such a valuable topic and your work with it and how you came about it and helping our listeners possibly turn in that direction. It's a really powerful tool.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Been fun, and have fun up there in Montana. Hopefully we'll come out of the deep freeze someday.
That's, I know.
Right now, we've come out of the deep freeze. We are now in the heat phase.
So we're in very weird.
First spring. In January. That's weird.
Okay.
All right.
Are you a business leader who is tired of dealing with your organization's missed deadlines, politics, or a culture of complaining and blaming? The root cause of your pain is unaddressed, unresolved conflict. And did you know that 60% of employees never received basic conflict training at work? Of those that did, 95% stated it made a positive impact on how they address conflict.
Check out our Beauty of Conflict Journey, an online interactive learning experience that drives behavioral change through your entire organization. For more information, go to www.thriving.com/BOC-journey. And we'll put that link in the show notes.